Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us. Lowell, Massachusetts, final day of this road trip. And then back at the Sunbury Motors Studio tomorrow. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Play-by-play call of the day. Pirates right now. Pirates, by the way, reinstating Jamison Tyone, who starts tonight. Francisco Cervelli now in the lineup tonight. So they're getting their players back. But they still are a game back of the Cardinals right now for second place in the division, in part because the Cardinals did this last night.
The pitch to Holliday. Line drive, base hit to left field. It is on the ground. The throw comes home, and he is safe. And it hits the runner, and it goes away, and the other man's going to score. And Holliday's down to second base. The throw goes past the catcher. That's a hot potato, man. Throw that ball out. Cardinals lead it 2-1.
Mike Shannon with the call on the Cardinals radio network last night. Our play-by-play call of the day. Let's talk a little Penn State football now from statecollege.com. Very pleased to bring in Ben Jones. Ben, welcome back. It is great to have you with us.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me. You were talking about real high leg kicks, and I thought we were going to talk about Draymond Green for a second. It's good to be back.
Yeah.
Good to be back.
And, Draymond Green... Has not been the best 6 weeks for him. How about that?
Yeah, that's for sure. That poor kid's going to transfer. He just got slapped right off campus. So it's been an eventful few days for him, for sure.
Lift for Life on Saturday. I saw you there. Apologize, did not get a chance to talk to you. I was a little bit busy running around. What were your just general impressions of watching a workout for charity?
It's really a great event. It always has been. I think it's neat to see how it's changed over the years, how it's gotten more and more streamlined. I think it's always been a challenge to figure out the best way to get a bunch of guys lifting weights in a sort of relay race kind of atmosphere. But like you said, it was a great afternoon. It's great weather. For the first time in a long time, it wasn't a million degrees, and that turf didn't, bake everybody. You know, if you want to talk about getting guys in shape for the season, they should just stand on that lacrosse field for an afternoon, and you'll cut weight real fast, I think. It's great. And you see the guys look in shape. You get to see Miles Sanders for the first time. He looks in great shape. There's a lot of these guys that are really making an appearance in front of fans for the first time, and I think that's always a good opportunity to kind of check guys over a little bit before they go into the summer workouts and before, training camp gets here in just a few weeks. So it's a good event. It's sort of the unofficial start to everything happening. So it's something definitely always looking forward to.
It's also an opportunity to talk to some of the players and also an opportunity, Ben, to speak with Dwight Gault. When Dwight Gault spoke with the media, what were some general takeaways that you had?
I think the biggest thing is really that just Penn State as a team is just getting bigger and bigger. I think he said, a few years ago they just had seven guys over 300 pounds. Now it's in double digits. They've got a tier system that sort of ranks where the athleticism and overall physicality of any given player is. They started out, the third tier is, the most elite athletes or what have you, and that number has continued to climb, going from single digits to double digits and deep into the double digits. Already. So I think really the biggest thing is you see that the Gault is being able to take these guys and shape them from being the freshman or maybe just not out of shape, but in one kind of shape player into something else. I think in a lot of ways, the best example of this outside of the football program is it's sort of like the Brandon Taylor transformation where he goes from a guy that maybe could have cut some pounds. He cuts some pounds, he gets more athletic, he gets in better shape, and he turns his career into something that sent him overseas to play professionally. And I think when you look inside the football program, Gault has been able to do that, taking guys, sort of shaping them. And that's the sort of thing that takes a few years in the system because you can't You know, you can't build kids overnight. You can't change bodies overnight or even over a summer in the sort of way that changes your program. So I think you're starting to see the physicality and athleticism match and mature much as the program does under Franklin and Galt's watch.
I'll take that a step further. I know on a couple of occasions on the network talk show on Thursday night, Dwight Galt has been the guest, and I asked him, Ben, on a couple of occasions over the years, where have you made adjustments? Like in anybody's job, you'll make an adjustment. And he told me that at Maryland, he said they were the strongest team in the ACC, bar none. He said, but he'd watch games and as games would go along, he felt like there was a mud factor as to how they moved. So he really then changed not just the emphasis on strength, but also speed. Did he discuss that at all about the type of quickness and speed he has with this team? Because they're developing that as well.
Yeah, he did touch on that. And it's one of the things that they've actually tweaked ever so slightly this offseason, because the sort of athleticism and agility that you needed under John Donovan's offense is a little different than the sort of mobility and speed that you need with Joe Moorhead. And Galt definitely touched on how they're trying to be a little faster, a little more agile. But at the same time, you don't want to give up the strength and the sort of the physicality and size that you've been working on obtaining. So there's definitely that balance where you have to be able to say, you know, we need our offensive linemen to be able to run a up-tempo offense. We need these guys to be able to pull. We need them to be able to block. We need them, you know, to stay in shape, because, you know, everybody talks about the fact that, you know, a defense gets on its heels and an up-tempo offense. But you got to have the lungs and the bodies on the offensive side of the ball to be able to make that work as well. So it's definitely a balance and a change and a sort of a juggling act between, you know, the sort of long-term goals that you want with the program with size and strength, but at the same time being able to adjust to the offense and the sort of you know, agility and speed that you're going to need to be able to run that efficiently.
Something else, too, is I sensed in talking with the players that there's been at least a schedule type of change for them over the past few weeks that's given them a little more time while there's the same intensity in the workouts. Did you get that same sense? And is the sense is that if that's true, it's worked?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it always the scheduling is one of those things that is always a delicate balance between you want to get these guys in the gym, you want to get them on the practice field a lot and be able to get in a lot of workouts. But at the same time, I think you'll see coaches across campus, you know, for all of the different sports, finding that balance between getting them on a field and being able to rest them to stay fresh. And sometimes, you know, the best way to stay fresh and be in the shape that you need to be in October and November is to do a little less in June and July from time to time, especially as the physicality and everything sort of picks up the practice starting here. So I think you definitely see guys seem fresh. They seem in shape and they seem ready to go. But at the same time, I know Garrett Sickles said that this offseason, him and Evan Schwann have had, you know, one of their best off seasons that they've had of their careers, you know, in the weight room and in the gym. So I think there's definitely, you know, even though these guys seem like they're enjoying the schedule and how things have laid out a little bit, you know, there's no doubt that it's still a productive offseason.
When you look at, you know, I also had a chance to talk with players. Which players did you get a chance to speak with, and what were their general impressions?
Sorry, you just were breaking up on me. Can you run that by me again?
Sure. Did you get a chance to talk to any of the players? If so, which ones, and what were their general impressions?
Yeah. No, I talked to Garrett Sickles and Evan Schwann, or two of the guys that I touched base with. They both, I think, kind of in the same place. I think that, you know, Schwann is a guy that, you know, contributed last year but wasn't a starter, but he was out there a lot. Garrett Sickles is a guy that obviously made a lot of plays last season, but I think that they both find themselves in a similar position where they're looking to prove that, you know, they can do this without Austin Johnson, they can do this without Carl Nassib, they can go out there and produce the same sort of numbers that you'd expect from a Penn State defensive line without maybe some of the big names. And I think Schwann in particular had a good point that, you know, last year one of the big question marks was how good was the defensive line going to be, you know, in a similar sort of situation. And you see these guys go out and turn out to be one of the best, you know, defensive lines in the country. So I think, you know, it's really just sort of embracing the opportunity to step up. You talked to Deshaun Hamilton, who's a guy that I realized yesterday is about, you know, 54 receptions away from being Penn State's all-time receptions leader. And you really feel like, you know, he took a year off, and that's really just a matter of how he was utilized and how he was, you know, how often he was throwing the ball. And, you know, frankly, it's going to be hard to have back-to-back years of 80-plus receptions But I think the fact that he moved to the slot seems to sort of have given him a new purpose, what have you. So I think guys are definitely excited. I think I talked to Trace McSorley this morning, talked to him on Saturday, and there's definitely an excitement about the offense, an excitement about getting going. And I think there's definitely a new sense of purpose maybe when you talk to some of these guys that things are, they're sort of anxious to show that a lot of the changes that have happened this offseason are for the better and they can be a better team than they were last year.
About Trace McSorley for a moment, it doesn't matter whether it's he or Tommy Stevens, when you're in the backup role, you're the backup all the way through, and there is a guy that is front and center and is the leader. When you ascend to that spot, it does bring with it the responsibility of leadership. What has he done to then understand what that mantle of leadership is, and is it natural for him?
I do think it is natural. When you talk to him, you sort of sense a guy that understands the role that he is in. Certainly the starting quarterback hasn't been named, but I think everyone is sort of expecting it to be Trace's job, at the end of the day. And I think he sort of senses that as well. He certainly won't admit it. And he and Tommy Stevens are good friends, and they're going to give each other the benefit of going through the motions of this competition. Trace is organizing practices, organizing things outside of practice, taking over those little things that maybe you don't see on a Saturday because they don't show it on TV, but the off-season work and leadership that you have to be able to get the chemistry with your offensive line, to be able to get the chemistry with your receivers, those extra things that nobody sees that make a big difference. And I think when you talk to Trace, you definitely see a guy that has embraced that role. And when you talk to Tommy, he's a guy that is definitely going out there and trying his hardest to win the job and doing what he can, to show his teammates that he has the tools, if you will, to go out and lead this team. So I think both of these guys, it helps that they're friends. It helps that they've gone through the motions of working as backups before. But definitely, I think, whichever one of these guys ends up ultimately being Penn State's starting quarterback, the offense will be in good hands because they definitely seem to comprehend the sort of leadership roles that they have to have if they want to be able to take the offense where it needs to go.
A lot of people have been talking about the Lash Bash and recruiting that just took place. But they're also, with this current class, you mentioned Miles Sanders and seeing him for the first time, as well as a couple of the other guys like Daniel Joseph and so forth. There's one member of the recruiting class that was recruited that is not here yet. What do you know about his status?
That's a good question. And if my name was Greg Pickle, I'd have a better answer for you. But I think, whenever freshmen come on campus, there's always the sort of tension that the coaching staff has to make sure that they get everybody where they need to be. There's a lot of hoops and ladders and things you've got to go through to get to that point. But I definitely think, at the end of the day, everybody's going to show up and be accounted for.
Appreciate it very, very much. Talk soon, and thanks for the time.
Yep, thanks for having me, Steve.
Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. We'll come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Well, as you know, in Great Britain, betting is legal. The Open Championship just took place, and Henrik Stenson winning allowed one guy to win a lot. Now, listen to this. They're allowed to make a tab multi two-leg bet. And this guy bet on Henrik Stenson to win the British Open and Aaron Baddeley to win the Barbasol Championship. So, of course, in our country, it's known as a parlay. So it's a multi-bet, commonly called a parlay here. A bet in which a gambler pairs the outcomes of different events together. And in this case, Stenson was 34-1, Baddeley was 51-1. Both golfers had to win their respective tournaments or it would be a lost wager. This guy wagered $50. The overall return that he got, because he got it right, was $86,700. Not bad. $50 bet. And Stenson won the Open Championship, and Aaron Baddeley won the Barbasol Championship.
I mean, thinking of all these people earlier this year that were betting on Leicester City in the Premier League.
Yes, made a ton of cash. I'm going to see a pitcher tonight that is trying to work his way back to the major leagues, Brian Johnson. Brian Johnson had his apartment robbed. And after he had his apartment robbed, he suffered from anxiety issues. Now, this guy had been with the Red Sox. I mean, I'm talking like he pitched with the Red Sox. He pitched against the Spikes 4 years ago. 4 years ago, he pitched against the Spikes. He was a first-round pick out of Florida. And the it's been he's going to be so tonight. I mean, a guy that I mean, that team that we just had Tim Neverett on, they're looking for pitching. But that's what happened to him. Guess evidently he was robbed and was placed on the inactive list. And it's really a completely different story. But he's making his second start with Lowell, and he's last time out, he threw five scoreless innings. And this guy, when he pitched against the Spikes 4 years ago, and Mookie Betts was his second baseman that night, okay, so it was a little different kind of ball club. He only pitched two innings because, you know, he had just signed and the whole deal. They were just trying to work his way through. He blew him away in two innings. I mean, I'm talking six guys up, six guys down. You're like, okay, go to the bullpen. Somebody just go to the bullpen. Send a report to the Red Sox. Tell him he's doing fine. But, I mean, he's been here. Joe Kelly's been here. Brian Workman, who pitched in the majors, is still here. Yeah. You got a lot of guys, and they're going to see one of the major league guys tonight. That's Brian Johnson, who's trying to work his way back. And let's face it, you're talking about a club, as we just discussed with him, that needs help. Well, he'll get the ball tonight, so that'll be interesting to watch this evening and see how he does in the ball game. Lance Carter, the former Williamsport pitching coach. He's the pitching coach here at Lowell now. So I know a lot of people in the area really liked Lance Carter, liked him personally, did a lot of things that they really were, that they were impressed with at Williamsport. Well, and now he's with this organization as the pitching coach here. Great to have you with us. Great day for a ball game, and we're looking forward to that tonight. Looking forward to being back tomorrow. Once again, we've got plenty of family here tonight as well. It's interesting because I was talking to John Leahy, who does a great job as the Lowell Spinners play-by-play guy. He says, yeah, he said, I got some family here. And I says, yeah, ironically, so do I. and John also does the Merrimack College hockey games. And Merrimack College is really good. And John says he can't wait to do a game down at the at Pagoula, and I hope at some point that happens. All right. Final half hour of the show coming up at 1-800-795-9565. Look forward to hearing from you. Jump on in. Love to talk with you about anything that is going on. As you see, the WWE, several former wrestlers, 50 of them. Some of the names you would know, like Jimmy Superfly, Snuka, and so forth, they're suing the WWE over concussion protocol. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I'm surprised that that hasn't popped up a lot sooner than just a couple days, within the last day or two.
Well, you know what? It's interesting about that. It is an event of tremendous athleticism. It doesn't matter whether, you know, it's a predetermined outcome or not. That doesn't matter. That's irrelevant. To me, what's relevant is the athleticism with which they play with. And the athleticism is unbelievable. I mean, it may be predetermined who wins, but you fly off the top rope, you fly off the top rope. You fly out of the ring and hit your head, you fly out of the ring and hit your head. You hit the canvas the wrong way in there and hit your head, you hit your head. Whether the outcome's predetermined or not.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us. And time now for our sports bozo of the day. Boogie Cousins, Sacramento Kings. Openly criticizing the club as to how they drafted. Now, the Red Sox, the Kings... actually, we're trying to trade Cousins, who, to his credit, has talent. He's on the U.S. Olympic team. He's probably one of the top 20 to 25 guys in the game. There's a pure talent. But guess what? Nobody wants him. Why? Because he is a problem. The Celtics were allegedly looking at him. Guess what? They got a guy just as talented that is more of a team guy in Al Horford. Done. And, that's the story on Cousins. I'm going to criticize the draft. I was going to criticize the future teammates they brought in. Brilliant. Brilliant. That's why you love guys like that. You love them. They're great. It's exactly the kind of guy you want to go out and have as your teammate. Yeah, I think I'll feed you the ball. Yeah, I'll feed you the ball. No.
Okay, we'll get Steve reconnected from Massachusetts here. Steve Jones Show, News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com. Right before the 4:30 break, we were talking about the gentleman who made the bet on the two golfers. So if you want to follow up on that story, we found the story on golf.com. We got it posted on our Facebook and on our Twitter. So give us a follow on Twitter at Steve Jones PSU and at Steve Jones Show on Facebook. And the great thing is, if you miss any of the shows live, if you missed the Tim Nebert interview with Steve from last hour, we have got that posted on our we have that posted at stevejonesshow.com. We will right after the show. So don't hesitate to check out stevejonesshow.com. And click podcast.
I'm back.
Great.
I'm back.
No problem.
Okay. Well, that's what happens when you accidentally knock out the
Okay. Well, you were talking about Boogie Cousins and the draft, and, yeah. and quickly you mentioned yeah. Al Horford. There's not too many of my friends that follow NBA, but out of all the moving and shaking going on in free agency, I think the big move was Boston getting Al Horford was the big surprise outside of the huge money that was being doled out here, there, and everywhere.
Well, that's because the Celtics don't usually get free agents. They don't do that. It's not their bag. That's not what they do. And they got him. That's what the big difference is. We're going to see Brian Johnson here tonight. Actually, more of the story in him. He was actually placed on the anxiety on the disabled list for anxiety on May 21st. You know what happened to him? He's down in Florida during spring training. He got carjacked, right? The guy that, by the way, carjacked the car, right, fired a shot into the ground. Okay? No offense. I think most of us would have anxiety, too. But he threw 5 scoreless innings the last time out. So that's, I'm going to see him tonight. So looking forward to that. He pitched against the Astros last year. There aren't many guys that come into the league like, oh, yeah, so who'd you pitch against last year? Oh, the Houston Astros. Oh, okay, great. Terrific. We're in the New York Penn League, right? You pitch against the Astros? Okay. So that's tonight's assignment. WWE's 50 guys are suing the WWE over concussion protocol and concussion issues. And that is that I guess you really can't be surprised by that. You know, we could, it, like I said, the outcome may be predetermined, but it's going to be a situation where, I mean, you may be predetermined, but, I mean, Sean and I can't even climb to the top rope, let alone conceive of jumping off of it. You still get thrown out of the ring, even if it's predetermined. How you land is not predetermined. Even though you practiced landings before, they all aren't going to be perfect. Same thing on the canvas or turnbuckles or anything like that. It's, you are going to suffer the possibility of head injuries. The next thing that's going to come up at some point, I would expect at some point MMA becomes a problem. Because, they get down on the canvas and people wail away at the head. And they aren't protected in that either. And again, do fans want that? No, fans do not want that. Fans do not want that. They don't. They want to see what they're seeing. That's why they showed up. We talked about the elimination maybe in college football, the kickoff. Now, what do you do with onside kicks? Do you, after a touchdown, have the option of an onside kick or the ball at the 25-yard line? Maybe. I mean, why was the kickoff moved from the 40 back to the 35 back to the 30? It was done because they wanted to put more kickoff returns back in the game. Well, then they started looking at concussion lawsuits and so forth, and guess what? They moved the kickoff back to the 35, as did college football. But then college football put the additional rule in about a touchback bringing the ball out to the 25. Why was that done? Same story, to deter kickoff returns. Now, you get a team like Ohio State, and Penn State now does this, but Urban Meyer's done this for years. They directional kick down to the 2-yard line. They make you to return it because they're trying to keep you inside the 20. And Penn State tries to do the same thing. You know, one of the stats I have on my chart is, where do you start on a kickoff? Well, I think last year the start point for Penn State, when they kicked off, the opponent started from the 23 last year. So that's a plus 2 per. Clemson kicked off 115 times last year. They also played the ACC championship game, the college football semifinal, and the college football final. So they did play in all of those. So three extra games compared to some other teams, two more than those that played in bowl games. And they kicked off 115 times. Texas San Antonio, which gave up a lot of points last year, returned 71 kickoffs last year. So that's a big, those are big numbers that you deal with when it comes to violent collisions on the field. Do I feel like I see an inordinate amount of injuries on kickoffs? No, I don't. I don't know about you, Sean, but in broadcasting games, I don't see an inordinate number of. Now, I also know it's violent. Yeah, obviously, I know that, and I also know because I watched it practiced. You watch it practiced. The first time you're there with a live kickoff situation is, you know, really live, where the whole thing goes all the way through live, is the opening game of the season. They do everything right up until everybody hits the returner in practice. They do everything. You know, you're blocked in the whole thing. And it's the way you block in these things. But the returner gets hit and can be hit in violent ways. There's no question about that.
So you and Jack Hammy, you've got a decade and a half under your belt broadcasting together. Obviously, you're pretty much focused on the ball and where it's going. So with kickoffs, do you pretty much stick with where the ball and who where it's going? And is Jack focused strictly on just the wall, or does he look for something else compared to when you're just focusing on the ball?
He's looking to see where the hole's developing. I mean, that's where he's looking. I mean, because, I mean, these are set plays. And they've tried to do different things with it. There's no wedge anymore. You're not allowed to do a wedge. No more than two guys. Used to be three. But they changed this a couple of years ago. No more than two guys can start out hands held and as a semi-mini wedge going in one direction. And only two can do that now. Me, I'm always following the ball. Yeah, I have to follow the ball. You know, it kicks high end over end. It's deep, takes about 3 yards deep, coming out, goal line, 5, 10, 15, 20 yards left, 25, 30, you know. And that's, you know, I'm following the ball. He's looking to see where the hole is. And, you know, and usually about the same time the two of us see where it is and where it's opening up. I mean, there's no doubt the biggest hits in games, occur on one or two plays. Okay, biggest hits in games usually occur on passes over the middle. Receiver locks in, tries to concentrate on it, and a safety zeroes in. The other one is on kickoffs. I mean, you can get them on punts, too. They actually, remember a few years ago, they put in that rule about the two-yard radius rule, where you could not be inside of 2 yards until they physically caught the ball. And then, of course, they changed that rule. They brought it back the way it was, and you can guy catches, he can be decked right away. You know, things have changed, obviously. I mean, I have not played high school football in 41 years when I was a senior in high school. In fact, my 40th high school reunion is this year. I'm not going, but because I've got a game that weekend. I think they win the night. They're doing it the night before the Michigan State game. I don't think I can make it. Or I think they're doing it the night of the Michigan State football game. I can't make it. And glad to say I can't make it. It means I'm doing the game. But that's how long it's been since I played. Well, when I played. And I, you know, despite what you may think in listening to the show, okay, I haven't suffered a concussion. Now, listening to the show, I think you might find that hard to believe. But but I remember when guys did get, quote, their bell rung. Well, what they would do, and this is 40, you know, I played, you know, and back in the 70s, 73, 74, 75, okay? When I was in high school. And guy would get his bell rung, they'd grab some smelling salts, and boom, okay, fine, all right, hey, how many fingers? Two, great, good guess, go back in. That's the way it was. We didn't know what we know now. We didn't know if you got one concussion, you were 50% more susceptible to getting a second concussion. We didn't know that. You know, all the advances made in the last 20 years have been remarkable to let us know what's going on with head injuries. And as I mentioned back in April, May, when the initial set of lawsuits came out for the NCAA, Dr. Margo Patukian was at Penn State. Margo's there, man, I want to say she was there maybe about 20 years ago. And she was the team doctor primarily with men's basketball. And she would talk to me all the time about head trauma and the research she was doing on head injuries. So now we know a lot more. And I'm completely, I mean, you have to be completely with concussion protocol because I think it's very important. You know, we talk about the development of a player, Sean, and I've always stolen Joe Paterno's line all the time. I'd rather play a guy one game too late than one game too early in terms of their development as a player, you know, which deals with confidence and things like that. Well, it's the same thing with concussion protocol. I would rather err one game too late than one game too early because of the severity of it. And I'm glad now that they have, you know, at first, when the NFL put people in the stadium that could take you out for concussion protocol, I was like, I don't know. You know, at first. Well, now, I know how incredibly necessary it is, and they're doing the right thing. And the Big Ten, I would like to see the Big Ten be a leader and have concussion protocol in college, too. Why not? It's all for the benefit of the players. I'd rather know that somebody is okay, lose them for a couple of series, find out that they pass, put them back in, you feel confident about it. Or if they have it, then I'm glad they've been pulled. It's one thing to, you know, you rehab an ankle, you rehab a knee. Rehab is much better now than it used to be. Concussions are different, completely different. And I think the more that they do, I'll give you, here's a prime example. I mean, here I am, like, you know, I said I went up, saw my son last night. It was literally a 15-minute trip from here to Hudson, New Hampshire to see him. So I'm right on the New Hampshire border. The New Hampshire 301 took place at Loudoun. No Dale Earnhardt Jr. Nobody knew he had a concussion. Wow. And he probably is not going to race in the Brickyard 400.
Yeah, and look who they're going to bring out of the bullpen.
Right, yeah, Jeff Gordon they're talking about, which has become a big story. But to me, in the current topic, the big part is, I mean, even in that, look, a race driver with the collisions that they have, and they're wearing helmets, and they've got neck braces and everything else. I mean, even that, same thing, concussion protocol. And you're 50% more likely to get a second one after you have a first one. Well, people 20 years ago didn't know that until people like Margo Patukian started really working on it. And she worked hard on research like that. Doug Aukerman worked hard on research like that. Wayne Sebastianelli, a lot of people have been working hard on this for a long time because they know how important it is to long-term health. Now, it comes to light with the Dave Duersons and the Junior Seaus. But it's also an everyday thing. We got to come back. We'll take a break. Back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors.
True refreshment can come in many forms, but it can only be found in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewer's Outlet in Sunbury. Along with their great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, they have lots of water, soda, fresh roasted peanuts, and an unbelievable variety of pickles at the Pickle Bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and your favorite snacks, too. Get true refreshment all in one place. The Beverage Supermarket, Brewer's Outlet in Sunbury.
waning moments of the show. It's our version of the ninth inning. With two outs and nobody on.
Ugh, ninth inning tough for the Phillies last night, losing the 2-0 lead and going extras and dropping 3-2 to the Fish. That was a tough loss last night.
But Nola
looked good, though.
Now, Nola pitched really well last night. Now, after they skipped him in the Colorado start, he then comes out and gets that start last night. Very encouraging. Look, between he and Vasquez and, look, they've got something there. Then get a couple of other guys to get involved in what's going on. I mean, you know, we talked about Thompson maybe. I mean, the question is going to be now a matter of timing on these contracts as to how you do this. At some point, you do have to find out what's in the tank. At some point, you do have to find out. But you do have to think about, you know, the Chris Bryant scenario, the Bryce Harper scenario, the Gregory Polanco scenario as to when they're called up. But at some point, you do have to find out what's in the tank, because guess what? Moving forward, this is your tank. Right? This is what it is. And everybody knows it. And there's only so many stopgaps you can have. What will they do with Hellickson? I can tell you right now, a guy that's going to be a hot guy that people are looking at right now for trade, you know, you talk Chapman and Miller all you want, or maybe a Carlos Beltran, but Irvin Santana from the Twins. And the Red Sox are definitely in the hunt for him. That's when Tim Neverett was on earlier. That's what he was hinting at. Was Tim Neverett that's what he was hinting at? That's one of the rumored possibilities. So they're going to need more starting pitching. And as he mentioned, Koji Uehara is the closer right now. Well, Koji is older than Sean. I mean, Koji's 40 years old. He's almost 41.
I'll take that as a compliment. I mean, don't look a day over 40. Actually turned 50.
Oh, well, you know, I mean, Koji goes out there. I think he's the only pitcher in the league on Medicare.
Him and Bartolo Colon.
Well, Bartolo Colon has his AARP card on top of it. Bartolo gets discounts at restaurants on the road. We're back in the Sunbury Motor Studio tomorrow. I know you're all excited. Phil Hillgrove later in the week. Nate Bauer. Tomorrow, Ryan Snyder from Blue White Illustrated. Thanks to Tim Neverett and Ben Jones.
Your home for the Phillies. News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.